Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Okay, so just as a bit of a preface to today's class, but also a follow-up from last week's class. In the last pasuk, we have Ruth, who is clinging to her mother-in-law. And after she's hugging and she's clinging to her, Naomi says, you should follow. You should follow your sister. You should go with Orpah. And she says, Shva yevimtech el ama ve'el elehel. Go back to her nation. Go back to her God. So go back to her nation. Okay, go back to your family. Go back to her God means you should go back to pagan ways of idolatry. And the question, of course, is, but didn't Ruth convert? And even if Naomi was certain that Orpah's conversion was not a valid one and she wasn't sincere, she couldn't be certain about Ruth, and the proof is in the pudding, that Ruth was actually sincere. So how can you tell somebody who is Jewish, go become a pagan? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Once you convert, you're Jewish. Doesn't matter what you do. You can't escape it. So how did Naomi have the ability? How did she have the conviction? How did she have the moral right to go ahead and do that? So we talked about this a number of times already. I'm just going to give a quick recap. And it's the last time I'm going to talk about this particular subject, but it's important to emphasize. There are two schools of thought in the writings of our sages, starting already from the earliest of our sages in the Rishonim, following down into the Achorim. There are two schools of thought whether or not Machlon and Chilion converted their wives, al pi halacha, whether they were actually Jewish, or whether they basically married out of the faith. Desperation, whatever excuses they made, everybody makes excuses for what he or she does, but the fact is that they married women who were not really Jewish. So there are two schools of thought. One school of thought is that there was a valid conversion, and if there was a valid conversion, why do we need to have another conversion, if you will? And it becomes a bit of a really kind of to solidify the conversion that had been done previously. Or the more common school of thought is that it was not a proper conversion altogether. And that's why Ruth has to convert. She has to become a Geirus. She has to join the Jewish people. And we learn many halachas of how a person is accepted, how a convert is accepted from the story of Ruth and from the particular conversation that we learned about last week about the dissuasion of Ruth and of Orpah. So one of the ways of reconciling these two disparate schools of thought is that there was a conversion. The question was this a conversion al pi halacha? What could the argument be? So there's a machlokes whether or not a person can convert on their own. If a person immerses in a mikveh and accepts upon themselves Hashem Elokei Yisrael and accepts upon themselves to live a life as a Jew, whether that in and of itself is considered to be a sufficient conversion, or does there have to be a beth din present? This is a machlokes of the Shoinim. The Rambam says, he paskins la halacha, that there has to be a beth din present. Which is one of two reasons why most halachic conversions are most definitely meaningless. Why? Because number one, there's no Kabbalah Samitzvahs. And a non-halachic conversion, if you want to call it that, you know, the forum, etc., there's no acceptance of mitzvahs. You have to eat three falafel balls and dance a hurrah. I'm exaggerating, but it's there's no Yiddishkeit. Watching Holocaust movies doesn't make you Jewish. Learning Israeli folk dancing doesn't make you Jewish. So if you don't even know what the mitzvahs are, how could you accept the mitzvahs? If the teachers or the rabbis or rebbetzins, whatever you want to call them, who are bringing you into the process of conversion themselves don't keep mitzvahs and themselves don't believe in mitzvahs, what kind of conversion is that? So that's number one why this, the non-halachic conversion is meaningless. It's not a conversion, and the convert is not Jewish. The other reason is because these are people, the people who preside over the conversion, who are themselves not valid as a Beth Din. Why would they not be valid as a Beth Din? Because not observant Jews. A Jew is not observant. A Jew doesn't keep Shabbos. A Jew doesn't know anything about halacha. So then they're not a Beth Din. If there's no Beth Din, there's no conversion. Because the Rambam says there has to be a conversion. It's like, for example, if a man gives a woman an object of value, let's say for argument's sake a ring, because that's how Kiddushin is affected these days. And he says, Hareat mekudeshet li b'tabat zo, k'dat Moshe v'Yisrael, he says all the right pronouncements. and everything is correct. Everything is right. Everything is so. The ring belongs to the man, and the woman accepts it. Everything is, it's all so good. One little problem. There's no witnesses. There's no kosher witnesses, and there's a specific halachas of what is called an eid. Is she an aishas ish? Is there a marriage? The answer is most definitely not. Why? Because there's no eidim. And that's why a key component in kiddushin is the concept of being miyached eidim. You have to have eidim. If you don't have eidim, you don't have a kiddushin. So just like you have this idea you need to have eidim, the Rambam says you need to have a bezdin. If there's no bezdin, there's no kiddushin. So this is one general concept that's important for you to understand. Now, we, of course, are living after the Rishonim and after Piskei Dinim and so on and so forth. But there exists a distinct possibility that there was this school of thought, these divergent schools of thought always existed. So the suggestion is made that the Naomi and her husband Elimelech, for that matter, did not really believe that there was a good conversion over here. They said there was no Bezdin. Where was the Bezdin in Moav? They didn't have a Bezdin. There was one Jewish family, Elimelech. Elimelech was not a Bezdin. Elimelech was dead anyway. There was no Bezdin. Since there was no Bezdin, Elimelech did not believe it, and Ruth didn't believe it, and Naomi didn't believe it. But Machil and Chilion said, you know what, under the circumstances, no Bezdin, we're in Moav, the conversion could be a conversion. So therefore, from Naomi's perspective, there's no conversion. This is what the Emunas Chachamim says. To me, it seems this is the best way. There are various ways of reconciling the seeming disparity between Machil and Chilion, who are, you know, observant Jews. They're not terrible people. How would they go and do something against Halacha? How would they go and intermarry? But on the other hand, Rus is doing something which seems to be totally inappropriate. Pardon me, Naomi. Naomi is pushing Rus away, and she pushed Orpah away. She said, go home, go become an idolater. How can you do such something like that? So this school of thought really explains things very well. It makes a lot of sense. Machlin and Chilion were convinced they did the right thing under the circumstances. Rus, Naomi did not believe Rus is halakhically Jewish. She thought that Orpah is like a reform convert, let's say. You know, it's she meant well. It's all fine and good. Unfortunately for her, though, she's not really Jewish, and therefore, she didn't feel any responsibility for saying, go back, join your people, go and join your gods. I'll ask the question, and this question is raised by many. Avodah Zarah, idolatry, is prohibited for a Gentile also. It's one of the seven Noahide laws. So how could you go ahead and tell a Gentile, oh, go ahead, you're not Jewish, worship your idols, enjoy your pagan gods. What? You can't do that. You can't do that because not only are we not allowed to encourage somebody to worship idols, we, the Jewish people, were given a mission at Mount Sinai to try to influence all people, not just Jewish people, all people in a positive way, which includes Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. That includes the mitzvah of influencing all of humanity, the non-Jewish world also. And one of their mitzvahs is that they shouldn't worship idols. So how do you understand the pshat? So the thing is that there is a distinction between the prohibition of Jewish idolatry and non-Jewish idolatry. There's something called a principle called Elikad Elikaya, the God of all gods, which means that for a Gentile to believe that there is a supreme God, but that there is intermediaries or intercessors between you and God, it's not exactly idolatry. It doesn't violate the principle of idolatry, and it would still in the vernacular be called a monotheism. And one of the very most famous monotheisms basically uses that principle. When you believe in a godhead or godheads, so for a Jew, it's idolatry. For a Gentile, it's not mamash idolatry, because ultimately you believe in one God, you believe in the one true God. But for a Jew, Elikad Elikaya is prohibited. We are not permitted to have godheads. We are not permitted to have intermediaries or intercessors. We have to have a relationship with Hashem directly, and anything else, anything that's short of that, is considered to be Avodah Zarah. So Naomi wasn't saying, go back and become a full pagan, go back and worship idols. She was saying, go back to your, you know, godheads, the things that make you comfortable and the way you were brought up, and, you know, you have your intercessors or your shamans and your spirits and your figures. Okay, fine. And just go live a comfortable life. Just do what you've always done. And you don't have to follow me anymore. You know, this was a failed experiment. You married my sons, they died, everything is lost, I'm going home, and that's all. So it was read last week. Orpah says, I'm out of here. She cries, her crocodile tears. Maybe they were somewhat sincere, as we learned last week, and she left. Rus, on the other hand, now responds. And I wanted to reemphasize what Naomi was saying, because that really is a segue into today's class. We're picking the class up at Pasuk Tazayin, verse 16. So after Naomi makes this speech, if you will, or she says these words to Rus, and the princesses have parted already, it's only Rus and Naomi, Vatoimer Rus. Rus says to her mother-in-law Naomi, Al tifgi'i bi. What does tifgi'i mean? Well, Rashi says, Al tifziri bi, which means, do not pressure me. The best English word is entreat. Do not entreat me. Don't keep telling me the same thing. Stop pushing me. You know, like to be a nudnik, to be like obnoxious. You keep harassing. Don't harass me anymore. Stop it already, she says. Enough. Stop pushing me. Stop pressuring me. Lo ozveich, that I should abandon you. I don't want to abandon you. And this idea of al tifziri bi, meaning don't continue to pressure me and harass me, the Ibn Ezra says that we find a similar word as tifgi'i. We find the word in the beginning of the Torah's narration of Avraham Avinu's presence in Eretz Yisrael. So the first time that Avraham Avinu actually purchases a piece of land is after Sarai Imenu dies. In Sarai Imenu's death, the Jewish people begin to live, so to speak. Sarai Imenu's legacy, first legacy is that a piece of Eretz Yisrael was purchased. Now Avraham Avinu wants to purchase a burial plot. You know the story. There's a place called Machpelah, and there's a cave, and so on and so forth. Okay. So having said this, the owner of the cave is Ephron. And Avram doesn't want any giveaways. Because if it's a giveaway, it's always Ephron's. I did you a favor. It's not really yours. I did you a favor. Don't tell me stories. This is your land. I let you live over here. So Avram Avinu says, if you want to be nice to me, and they said they want to be nice, you're a prince of God, he says, do me a favor. Ufi gu'uli bi Ephraim. Go and beg, cajole, entreat Ephraim. So that's how we should understand this al tif gu'ubi, on a literal level. Stop pressuring me. Stop asking me again and again. Stop entreating me. This is one approach. And that is the pshat approach. There is, however, a deeper and more profound and powerful message that is encoded. This is on the level of Medrash. The Medrash says, what does it mean, al-tivgu bi? Al-tivgu means that the Medrash understands it to be kind of like a misfortune. You know what they call, God forbid, a terror attack in Israel? It's called a pigua. Pigua shares a common word with pega. Like pegara is a bad encounter, a bad misfortune, a terrible thing that happens to you. So the Medrash says that altif gobi means there's an element, something negative that's going on over here. In fact, the Medrash in Yalkut Shemoni even seems to turn this as if Rus is saying to her mother-in-law, to Naomi, don't do something wrong. Don't make a mistake and push me away. You're actually, the Medrash says, this is going to be loy techtoi oloy. Don't sin on my account. You're pushing me too much. This is not fair anymore. You're going to be doing something wrong. You're going to be, something bad is going to come out of this. Loy tazbin pegoich mimeni. Stop turning this misfortune against me. Don't make me the scapegoat for all the bad things that happened. That you keep saying, lo azveich, lo shuv macharayich, leave me alone. Go away from me. I don't want to be with you anymore. It's a little like a joke. It makes a point. This guy's Nebuch in the hospital after his 14th surgery for who knows what, and he opens his eyes, and he sees his wife there, and he says, you know what, honey, he says, remember that accident I had 6 years ago? He says, yes, you were right there. And remember after that I fell down the stairs, and you were right there. Remember I had that account, you were right there. And he goes through all the surgeries and all the problems he had, you're right there. And he says, you know what? And she says, what? He says, I think you're bad luck. Okay, so it's a silly joke. But here's the point I want to make. It's like Rus says, stop like turning this into bad. It's not about me. All these things you did, you know, like, my son's died. Stop taking it out on me. Stop trying to say, go away from me, as if, you know, you think, well, I'm going to leave you, and all your misfortunes are going to dissipate. All your problems are going to disappear because I left you. It doesn't work like that. And she says, the Medrash says something fascinating. This is in Yalkut Shemayni. Mikol Mokim Daiti Lizgayr. I'm telling you, I'm converting anyway. I'm converting. It's not even about you anymore. I want to be a part of the Jewish people. Nothing is going to stop me. But she says, please, mutav al yadcha v'lo yadei acheres. I would much prefer to be brought into the covenant, into the wings of the Shekhinah, through you than through somebody else. So stop trying to push me away from you. And the Ma'am Loyas, very interestingly, when he talks about this idea of Al-Tif Gobi, he quotes in the name of the Yigeta Shmuel, he says, Shedvareha poigim bi ba kechitzim. Your words are piercing my heart like arrows. She says, so painful for me, says Rus, to hear you speak to me like this. Please stop it. Your words are killing me. This is very, you know, aggressive response. Rus is really starting to get upset. She's visibly shaken and bothered, and like, you know, people say, she's had it. At this point, Rus has had it, and she refuses to be pushed away anymore. And she begins to speak, and she says, stop pushing me la'ozvech lashuv macharoyach to go away from you. And here are some of the most famous and stirring and passionate words ever uttered throughout the entire Jewish Apocrypha, the whole Tanakh, some of the most beautiful words. She says, ki el asher tel chi elech, wherever you will go, I am going to go. Ba'asher tolini olin, where you will sleep, I will sleep. Whatever lodgings you'll have, they'll be my lodgings. Ameich ami, your nation is my nation. Elekayich elekoy, your God is my God. This is Rus's passionate outpouring in which she tenaciously clings to Naomi and she says, there's no going back. I am not going back to Moab. I am not resorting to my old ways. I am not, so to speak, re-embracing my former lifestyle. This is my life. And there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to negotiate about. So let's take a look in Rashi. Let's take a look at the pshat of these words. Why did she choose these words? Asher telchi eilech, she talked about going. And from going, she talked about sleeping. So I'm asking a silly question. Why doesn't she say, whatever you'll eat, I'll eat? Kosher food, no? So I'm going to eat kosher food, you'll eat kosher food. Is there a kosher way to walk? Not really. You hop, skip, or jump? Why didn't she say, Asher telchi eilech, the way you'll walk, I'll walk? Why didn't she say, what you'll eat, I'll eat? Why sleep? Why not live? Will you live? I will live. Why is she talking about sleeping? And why is it first Amech, Ami, your nation is my nation, and then only afterwards Elekayach Elekoy? Was it first like national or cultural ties? I love bagels and lox, and by the way, I want to be a Jew too. Like, what's with the Amech Ami? Who cares? First thing is a commitment to Hashem. And then should be Ami Amech. Nobody really asks these questions. I'm just trying to say that this is a pasuk that needs elucidation. They're very passionate words, they're very beautiful, they're very poetic, they're very stirring. What do they really mean? Why did she choose these specific words to cajole, to beg, to offer this heartfelt supplication to Naomi to continue to allow her to accompany her to Eretz Yisrael? So therefore, I think, this is the reason that Rashi, and uncharacteristically, begins to introduce kind of like a very long commentary. It's almost up until now, we haven't had such long commentary almost from Rashi, what we're going to have now. Rashi says, Mikan Amru Rabbeinu Zichrono Livracha, it is from this very verse that our sages say, that the Gemara derives in Masechet Yevamot on page 47, the halacha. What's the halacha? Geir Shebo Lehit Gayer, a person comes to convert. It's interesting, I just note that it doesn't say Goy Sheboli Hit Gayer, it doesn't say a Gentile who comes to convert, it says Ger. Well, if it's a Ger, then how can you be Megayer? If they're already a convert, why do you have to convert? And the answer is, nothing to do with specifically what we're learning now, but everything to do with this and in general the concept of Geirus, that a person who converts and joins the Jewish people was always destined to join the Jewish people. In fact, it's like they always had a neshama. The problem was the neshama wasn't downloaded. The program was out there, you just have to get online. And once the download happens, finished, then the software's in. Now, you can't download the wrong software onto the wrong hardware. It's not going to work. The software that's made for iPhone, for example, is not going to work in a BlackBerry. I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying, for example. It's not going to work. But what if I have an iPhone 3, and now they're up to iPhone 6, and iPhone 3 doesn't have all these new software? Oh, don't worry about it. iPhone is not forcing you to buy a new iPhone every 6 months, just every year and a half. They said, okay, if you have an iPhone, whether it's this big, or this big, or that big, if it can keep changing sizes, we have allowed you to download the software. We have created the software. Even though you have iPhone 3, you can still have software iOS 8. You can still catch up. Okay? So now the iPhone 3, Nebuchadnezzar is just the iPhone 3. You know, he stands next to the iPhone 5 and he feels all embarrassed. You know, iPhone 6 is such a sleek, cool animal, and he's just iPhone 3, just a grubby little thing. You know, so he feels very ashamed. So he say to iPhone 3, don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel you could become an iPhone 6 too. you can get this down. You were created. You just didn't get it yet. That's all. Don't worry. You can have the same cool graphics. You can have the same fancy system. So that's a Gersher Bolis Geyer. The non-Jew says, is it my fault that I was born to non-Jewish parents? I'm not halakhically Jewish, but I feel so close to this nation. I want to be part of the Jewish people. And we say, yeah, you're right. You probably were always destined to be part of the Jewish people, if in fact he or she is sincere. But we have to know that you're really sincere. And if you are really sincere, then you're a Gersher Bolis Geyer. You were always supposed to be a ger. Hashem arranged circumstances how you came to join the Jewish people, but you were always destined. You're a ger. You just weren't migayer. Okay. So the Gemara says that a ger, shabo, lehizgayer, midin le miktas ancient. You tell them some of the punishments. Sheimbo lachzer, bo yachzer. Sheimbo lachzer, bo yachzer. If they're going to say, oh, really? I thought Judaism was just an elective. Like, you could do nice things if you want to. You actually get punished if you don't do this thing? You mean there's actually consequences that are negative? Yeah. Oh, in that case, maybe I should reconsider. It's very important. People have to know that. It's not true when you present Judaism as it's just an optional stuff. You can enrich your life and you have a wonderful, beautiful Jewish life. Yeah, and that comes with burdens and responsibilities. And burdens and responsibilities also means consequences. So you have to talk about the consequences. The Gemara says we learn it from here. And Rashi starts to explain. Don't think that we have the whole conversation recorded over here. Only part of the conversation recorded here. He says, go back to your ways. But Rus doesn't answer, no, I'm going with to your ways. Rus's answer is very different than Naomi's words to her. So clearly a part of the conversation is missing, which is not unusual. That's typical in the Apocrypha, the Bible. We don't have, Tanakh is not written with the whole conversation. Lots of the story is sometimes encoded, hinted at. It's not clearly spelled out. So this is, you know, not surprising. But a lot of times we can understand what was said from another pasuk. And that's the meaning of learning Torah, not reading Torah. We have to delve into it, we have to analyze it. So the Gemara says, okay, we have to look carefully at the words of Rus and we'll know what exactly Naomi said to her. No, she said, Asher telchi elich, where you will go, I will go. So we understand from this that Naomi said to her, you know, we're not allowed to go out of the tchum on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you have to stay put. So you walk in your own city, and today we live in mega cities, which means you can walk all day and still be in Toronto, but once upon a time, you were stuck in the city. You can't go to the next village. She said, you're not going to be able to go out of the tchum. Amrullah, she said, don't worry, I don't care. Wherever you will go, if you won't go anywhere on Shabbos, I won't go anywhere on Shabbos. There is a kosher way to walk. The kosher walking is Shabbos walking. She said, we're not allowed to violate the prohibition called yichud. We're not allowed to seclude ourselves with a member of the opposite sex. We're not allowed to be alone. A man can't be with a woman can't be with a man. Not that anything happens, but the Torah says you're not allowed to be alone. Secluding yourself is wrong. So yichud. So she says, don't worry about it. I'm always going to be with you. How will I ever have yichud? Ba'asher tolini olin. I'm not going to end up sleeping in somebody else's room. I'm sleeping in your room. I'll be with you. She says, Amenu muvdalu mishar amim. Our nation is different. B'sheish meyes v'shleshes of mitzvahs and 613 mitzvahs. Now, of course, you can ask me a question. Last week I said, Rus is the gematria of 606, and all of a sudden 613. So the answer to that question is that even the seven mitzvahs, which the Gentiles are required to keep, is not exactly the same mitzvahs as our mitzvahs. Our mitzvahs are modified. And one example is what I just told you, where it comes to Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to worship idols. There's one prohibition for a Jew, another prohibition for a Gentile. It's called idolatry, but it's not the same prohibition. Since we are actually made distinct by 613 mitzvahs. So what does she respond? She says, Amech Ami. What are you telling me? Your nation is different? What are you? Your nation is different. Your nation is my nation. That is my nation. She said, but you realize this means no more pagan holidays. Asur lanu avedus kichavim. You can't worship idols. She says, that's not a problem. Elikoi, echelikoi. Your God is my God. Now, I'm going to stop for a moment because the rest of Rashi is actually applicable kind of to the next pasuk. So we're going to get there in a moment. But here's the astounding question. Why did Naomi choose these things to talk about? With regard to Tchum Shabbos, first of all, there's a huge machlekes, a big dispute amongst the Rishonim, whether or not it's a biblical mandate or a rabbinic mandate. The Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvahs that it's biblically prohibited. But he says that's not the small Tchum Shabbos, that's the big Tchum Shabbos of Yud Beis Mil, of 12 mil, which is close to a kilometer. It's not the smaller one of 2,000 Amot, which is a much smaller Tchum that we're required, that's rabbinic. That's the way the Rambam is explained by the Mefarshim, because Ramban attacks the Rambam and brings all kinds of proofs that the Halach is not like Rabbi Akiva, who says that it's biblical, and really it's rabbinic. So the answer is, the Rambam doesn't disagree. The Rambam is saying, the principle is biblical, the details are rabbinic. At any rate, we see that this is something that there's a lot of discussion about, there's disagreement about it, whether it's even biblical. So why would Naomi choose to talk about something that it's a question if it's biblical? Because, I mean, we can't say it's certainty because then the Ramban has no position. It's clear in the Apocrypha. How would the Ramban learn Megillas Rus? The Ramban for sure would learn Megillas Rus, and he for sure understood the Gemara in Yevamos that it was a rabbinic prohibition. Maybe the Rambam learned it and said, yeah, see, biblical. But we have two schools of thought over here. At least according to the Rambam and many who hold like the Ramban, it's rabbinic. So why would you say a rabbinic thing? Why don't you talk about biblical things? I mean, of all mitzvahs, think about it. If you meet a non-Jew that says, I would like to join the Jewish people, what's the first thing you're going to talk about? To say, dissuade them. Say, Tchum Shabbos. Maybe say Shabbos, you can't use electricity, which means you can't use fire, you can't cook. I don't know. Like, you might be cold. You can't light a fire to warm yourself up. In today's day and age, you can't flick the lights on. No kosher switches. I mean, like, why did she pick this? Somebody's not making sense over here. And then she picks Yichud. I mean, Yichud? There is a minority opinion that Yichud is Minat Torah. According to many opinions, Yichud with a regular Erva, with a regular opposite member of a member of the opposite sex, is not biblical according to many opinions. That's something that David HaMelech brought into existence. That's some details of Yichud and not even... Yichud is something that was phased in. So, Yichud of all things? Well, what's the big deal about Yichud? So you won't be secluded. Why did she choose that? And her answer, Basha Tolin Olini, well, you'll sleep, I'll sleep. I mean, what about the waking hours? There are lots of people who don't think twice about being secluded, being in the office with somebody, but they wouldn't share a motel room. So what kind of answer is that? She says, Yichud. She says, don't worry, I'll sleep with you. I'll sleep in your room. What does that mean? And that says, but you know, we have 613 mitzvahs. Maybe she should have said we have 613 mitzvahs to begin with. She talks about these details of Tchum Shabbos of Yichud, and then all of a sudden 613 mitzvahs. And it's not 613 mitzvahs that we're obligated in. It's like our nation is different. It's no, your nation is my nation. What's going on over here? And only at the end, she says you can't worship idols. You just talk about 613 mitzvahs while you're emphasizing worshiping idols. I mean, worshiping idols is big. Maybe worshiping idols should have been the first thing. I once, years and years ago, this boy was coming around there, he was, you know, putting on film, whatever, he was getting a little more involved in Yiddishkeit, and then he disappeared, and then he came back, and he called me one day, and said, I gotta come see you, I want to introduce you to somebody. Okay, fine. So he comes to see me, and he has a non-Jewish girl with him. And he says, so, this is my girlfriend, her name is Christina, she's a very nice girl, and maybe she'll be Jewish, so, you know, it's good to maybe help her be Jewish, and if help her be Jewish, we could just... I look at this girl, like she was clueless. I said, what do you mean you want to be Jewish? What does that mean? No, I like this guy. His name is Asaf. I like Asaf. And I'm like, oh, that could be cool. You know, I could do some Jewish stuff. I don't mind. I said, it's not Jewish stuff. Like, becoming Jewish means you have to leave behind your religion. Oh, I'm not very religious. Doesn't matter. I said, no. You like Christmas? Oh, I love Christmas. It's my favorite holiday. I said, you can't become Jewish and celebrate Christmas. That's a Christian holiday. She goes, I can't have Christmas? I said, no. She Just, oh, forget about it. She says, are you crazy, Asaf? What'd you bring me here for? That's like my meter's conversation over here. See, you can't have whatever you can't do whatever you've been doing. And that was like, forget about it. I said, by the way, that whole Jesus, oh yeah, I love Jesus. I said, we don't believe in a God. It's not going to work. Oh, she says, oh, no Christmas, no Jesus. I'm out of here, she says. There's nothing to talk about even. Okay, no problem. I said, I'm not pressuring you. I didn't suggest this. And Asaf was like, Rabbi, come on, it's just, no, Asaf, this is not going to work, okay? I can't help you with this. If this is the path you want to go down, I'm afraid I can't help you. I think you make a big, big mistake. Unfortunately, I haven't seen him since. But the reality is that this conversation seems to be very strange. And especially the Gemara says, here's where we learn it from. We learned it from the Ami. So the Sifsei Chachamim explains this Rashi in an exquisite way. He says, and actually, not only he explains how Rashi could make sense, he explains how and why the halacha is supposed to work. He's explained, this is actually the source of the halacha. What is the most difficult thing for a convert? Most difficult thing of all? Leaving behind a lifestyle, leaving behind family. I know from various converts, the most difficult thing is, you know, you have to, family events, talk about Christmas, not a question of Christmas, but who, you're not coming for Christmas dinner. The family gets together, it's very difficult. And anyway, Rus is going to be one woman, alone, she doesn't have a friend in the world. Okay, she has Naomi. She doesn't know anybody, she doesn't have family. You know, that could visit family. This is where most of the problems, the biggest challenges come from this. It says, you're going to go back to Moab. Aren't you going to go back to visit your family? So, like, there's going to be limitations. And it happens to be, as I mentioned earlier, that this, we believe that this was Shabbos. The first day of Pesach was Shabbos. And that Naomi believed that she was allowed to violate the Tchum. So, according to that, for whatever reasons, that's a discussion of jurisprudence that's beyond the pale of this class. But Naomi's telling her, you see how we're like walking away from Moab to Israel? You can't do this, like on the weekend. Like, oh, because when am I going to visit my family? What's the day of rest? What's the weekend for Jews? Saturday, Shabbos. Oh, Shabbos, Shabbos, I'll go walk back to Moab. You can't do that. You're not going to be able to go back and visit your family. So she says to her, that's fine. The way you're going to go, I'm going to go. Understand why they started with Chum? The next thing says the Sifsei Chum, she said, so when are you going to go? You're going to have to take like an evening off, go at night. You're going to have to go at a time when it's quiet and you're able to get away. She said, you know, you'd be alone in the road. Yichud is not, seclusion doesn't only mean to be alone in a room with somebody. To be alone in a forest with somebody is also yichud. You're going to end up in a state of yichud. She says, again, she emphasizes, you want to go back home to your family. She doesn't say that's the wrong thing. Of course, a person, it's your family, it's your sister, it's your parents, your cousins, your family. But you're going to have a problem with yichud. This journey is not going to work. I'm not coming with you. Now I'm with you. I'm not coming with you. You have nobody to take with you tomorrow. You have to go back by yourself. You go back by yourself. You can end up with yichud. So Rus says, no. Basher tolini olin. I'm not leaving you. Wherever you're gonna sleep, spend the night, I'm spending the night. I'm not going away from you. So she says, but still, you know, Jewish people, it's a new culture. It's a new milieu. You're going to want to go back. And you're going to go back into your former habitat. It's going to be very hard to keep 613 mitzvahs. Everything you do is going to be just outlandish and strange. Whenever you go back to visit, at any rate, you're never going to be fully comfortable. Even if you don't go back to visit, you're always going to have, if you will, your demons from the past. You're always, the way, she says, no, that's a thing of the past. She says, Amech Ami. I'm not afraid of 613 mitzvahs. That is my mitzvahs. That is my lifestyle. That's the life I want to live. And she says, this is the hardest thing. Like I saw with this Christina girl. I said, you're going to have to leave. You can't have another Godhead. It's very comforting for people. People like to have some kind of, you know, tangible divinity. Monotheism with nothing you could hold on to or nothing you could envision is very challenging. It's very difficult. Jewish monotheism was never really successful or popular. Paul was the greatest marketer of all time. He created a situation where you could marry Jewish monotheism with pagan tangibility. It worked very well. People want to have some kind of Godhead, a figure, something they could speak to, somebody they could talk to, somebody who could be as a God, as an intermediary, as an intercessor. So, Naomi says to us, You can't pray to your spirits anymore. You can't. That's Hashem. There's one God. Like, that's it. And Noam and Ruth responds, Elikayach Elikoy. So what's the beauty of this explanation? The beauty of this explanation is, when a convert wants to come and say, I want to join the Jewish people, so you have to point out the things that are actually relevant in his or her life. So for example, a convert will come, and the convert's a vegetarian. They're vegan, they don't eat meat. You come along and say, you know, if you join us, you can't eat pork. And the convert's like, I'm a vegan. That's irrelevant. What are you telling me? And you know, there's the prohibition that you can't have meat without slaughtering it. What are you telling me about shechita? I'm a vegan. So that's not going to dissuade a convert. The convert says, I'm there already. But that's not how you come to the Jewish people. It's not the things that you have already left behind. It's the things where there is an unwillingness to leave behind. What is the thing that's closest to a person? As they say, when everything else fails, what do you have? When everything disappears, what's the one thing you have left with you? Your family. Your family. Of course, Hashem. But there's a family. When everything goes down, your family will be there for you. And it's almost always true. Not always, but almost always. Your family's last thing. That's your comfort zone. It's your comfort zone. You know, if siblings, if parents, the most painful thing is if an only child loses the second of their parents. It's the most painful thing. Because the only child loses the second of their parents, no family left. Right? And that's, okay, so if you have the good marriage, you have your new family, you have your children. Imagine a person, and I've met people like this, who have no family in the world. A person who's alone in the world. Well, they don't have friends. Friends is not family. There's something about family. So Naomi says to Ruth, what are you doing? I'm like a friend. We have a relationship. I was your mother-in-law. I'm not your family anymore. You have flesh and blood in Moab. You have a family you're leaving behind. Don't you understand? It's not going to be easy to stay in touch with your family anymore. Are you sure you're ready to do this? And this Naomi responds to each of the tainis and says, yes, I'm ready to do it. You understand? It wasn't the details of Tchum Shabbos or a detail of Yichud. These, as the Sisser Chaim explains it, these were all details surrounding the natural comfort zone of Rus, which Naomi assumed to be, which was, you're going to have a very difficult time staying in touch with your family. And Ruth says, you're my family. I left all that behind. That's secondary to me. What's primary to me is that I become a member of Am Yisrael. I want to join the Jewish people. That's more powerful than anything for me. That makes a lot of sense. So once we have this, Rashi makes... Now this takes us into the next verse, which is interestingly broken into a second verse. Ruth continues, she's still speaking. She says, Ba'asher tomusi amos. Where you will die, I will die. Which is a little strange, because what is she suggesting? She's going to kill herself? How could a person know where they're going to die? It's a funny pasuk. It needs to be explained. Vishame kover, and there I'll be buried. How do you know where you'll be buried? Once you're dead, you can't tell anybody what you want. And even if you leave a message behind, you knew you were going to die, and you told them where to bury you, what's your guarantee they're going to bury you there? How could she make a blanket statement? You want to say, Elikayach Elikoy, your God is my God. I understand. That's how I feel. Amech Ami, your nation is mine. I understand. Where you'll sleep, I'll be in the same place. Okay. But I'm going to be buried with you? Who says? Who knows? I mean, like, even if Naomi says yes, how do you know that's going to work out that way? Circumstances. Koy Yasa Hashem Li, may God continue to do this to me. V'chay Yosef, May he add even more. Only death will part us. Only death will be able to divide us. This is a very difficult verse to understand. Okay, so let's try to understand it. Yeah, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. If there's a mitzvah of honoring your parents... So how could a convert become a convert and abandon their parents? It's a very good question. Well, she's leaving Moab. What if it's hurtful to her parents? Parents are good Moabites, and now they have a daughter who's Jewish, and they're very uncomfortable with this. So please, you're breaking her heart. She wasn't commanded. A Jew becomes observant. The father and mother say, stop it, this is ridiculous. We don't like this observance. You don't like it. What should I do? You're also supposed to be observant. You don't want to be observant. That's your problem. You can't force me not to be observant. But nobody's under duress. You don't have to join the Jewish people. There's no mitzvah for a Gentile. You must join the Jewish people. We don't believe that. So that's actually a very good question. First of all, the mitzvah of kibud av aim is given to who? To the Jewish people. First of all. But secondly, the point is that there is one relationship that is more powerful than the relationship between our parents, us and our parents. And that is the relationship between us and Hashem. Nothing supersedes the relationship between us and Hashem. There is no relationship that we'll say we'll sacrifice our relationship with God because of a different relationship. On a moral level, the highest relationship of all is a relationship with Hashem. So, yeah, she's going to be leaving her parents. Somebody doesn't make also disrespect. You're not allowed to disrespect. The convert's not allowed to disrespect the parents. But disrespect doesn't mean you have everything your parents tell you. You have to become a doctor. I don't want to be a doctor. I demand you be a doctor. I can't be a doctor. I don't want to be a doctor. So just because the Jewish mother decides that her son had to be a doctor and she made that decision when he was 8 days old, it doesn't mean that he has to be a doctor. And if he doesn't be a doctor, he's defying his mother's wishes and he's disrespecting her. I don't know about that. In fact, I know it's not so. A person has the right to choose their career. Respect has a very specific, within halacha, all these nebulous concepts are very exact. What does it mean, respect? There's a way you talk to your mother. There's a way you treat your mother. There are things you do and things you're not allowed to do. One of them is not, I have to do things such and such a way. Years ago, I had a mother come to me, and she said, my son wants to marry this girl. I said, okay, what's the problem? She's Jewish, yes. She's a fine person. Yes, but she's not for my son. So I said, how do you know? I know, I don't like her, she's not for my son. I said, well, first of all, if you don't like her, it's the biggest sign that she's probably your daughter-in-law anyway. You know, there's the joke they say, a guy came to his mother, he showed a picture of three girls, says, mom, who is the girl of my dreams? You tell. She takes a look, she says, that one. He says, amazing, how do you know? I couldn't stand it a second to lay eyes on her. The Gemara says that mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationships are not usually like Rusuna Ami. It's difficult. It's difficult. It's not. It's more often uncomfortable than it is unnatural, comfortable, easy fit. That's just the way it is. So having said this, having said that, would it be right? She said to me, but he has kibud av aim. Kibud av aim. And I demand that he not marry her. And I'm going to give him a good girl to marry. I said, lady, it's not a good idea what you're trying to do. Don't do this. Like, there's nothing wrong. He has to marry who he wants to marry. He can't marry who you want to marry. When you get married, you married a you. No, I didn't. I divorced him. I said, okay, that's your problem. He's going to end up divorcing your daughter. It doesn't work like that. You can't legislate your children's lives. You follow what I'm saying? Okay. So let's go back to this pasuk. This is a very difficult pasuk. Now, I don't know why. Maybe because Rashi wants to have a seamless conversation. He doesn't break this into a second Rashi. He just continues. And he says, Arba miseis nimsru lebezin. There are four capital punishments which are given over to the courts, the ecclesiastic court, which we don't have today, and we haven't had for more than 21 centuries. And these capital punishments can happen if somebody, chas v'shalom, violates the Torah. It's a very rare occasion, and so on and so forth. But there is such a concept. So it seems that Naomi, the Sif Sicham says, Naomi was saying to her, well, what if tzugizunt, what if you end up, you know? This Jewish thing, it's not so easy. If you can do a big avera, you know, passion's got the better of you, the big avera. And then you have to face a capital punishment. Now, there are no capital punishments. Life is good. You're cool. You make a mistake, you made a mistake. You just move on. In the Jewish system, it's very, very difficult. So she said, Ba'asher tomusi amos. You're not afraid of living under that threat? Like, you'll die, I'll die. What, are you afraid of dying every day? I'm okay with that. That's fine. I accept upon myself that I will live in a system that has a capital punishment. I accept that. I'm fine with that. So she says to her, but you know, it's so harsh, some of the Jewish law, that there's not even, you don't even get buried with the family, and you don't even, there's like two cemeteries, a cemetery for two kinds of capital punishment, or different for the other two kinds of capital punishment. She says, whatever, v'shom mekover, what's the problem? Whatever it's going to be. I'll, like, you'll die, I'll die. Are they buried? I'll bury, so v'shom mekover. So what? I don't care. In other words, I know the challenges. I know the danger. I know the difficulty. I am ready to accept this. I'm ready to accept this. So that's the way Rashi explains and the Tzivos HaChacham explain, which actually, you know, we'll soon see other explanations, but it sits nicely in pshat, especially the way the Tzivos HaChacham explains it, which is all part of the dissuasion, although the first part of the dissuasion then, which explains why it's in two psukim, the first part of the dissuasion is you'll be away from your family. It's very difficult for you to stay in touch with your family. The second part of the dissuasion is, you're going to come here and look what kind of harsh conditions you're going to be putting on yourself. You're setting your bar very high. Maybe that's too difficult. So in the second pasuk, she says, I accept upon ourselves. I'm ready, whatever it's going to be, kasha tumusi amos, v'shamei kaver. If that's what happens, and I make this mistake, and I do the Rana Veda, and I deserve to be put to death, I am willing that that should happen to me. I want to live as a Jew. If that's what it takes to live as a Jew, I'm ready to accept it. You'll get buried it, fine. So I'll have shame that follows me into the grave. That's fine. I'm ready. Now, the second half of the pasuk is even more hard to understand. And Rashi actually includes it in a second Rashi, a separate Chai Yosef, Hashem, may it continue this way. May what continue this way? Rashi says something very difficult to understand. He says, Kasher hischu lahara, as things have gone badly for me ever since I became a Jew, well, ever since she entered the Jewish nation, even if Naomi doesn't accept her conversion, she thought she was becoming Jewish. And ever since I came part of the Jewish nation and I married my husband, what happened? What happened? I lost everything. Hashem's hand has gone out against me. Yatzah b'yadei, l'hamasishi. He killed my husband, took away my husband. Related minichasei. He took away all my possessions. So now, I'm a widow, I'm husbandless, and I'm penniless. So what is she saying? Bring it on. Whatever else it's going to be. Take my legs away. Well, what is she saying? What does it mean? What does it mean? Why would you invite danger? Why would you invite punishment? Why is she saying this for? It's really, Rashi's words are very hard to understand. So, in a more midrashic way, the concept of Chay Yosef, V'Chay Yitain, could be understood that she said to her as follows. If Hashem doesn't want to be nice to me, so to speak, in other words, if being Jewish is not going to bring me material wealth or success, I'm still ready to be Jewish. What does that mean? That means that a lot of times people do things for ulterior motives. What will the ulterior motives be? I'm going to get good things. Comfort, wealth, plenty. I want to be Jewish. I want to do mitzvahs because God's going to give me. What if God's not going to give you? What if you find out that mitzvahs are not going to bring you a moment of respite in this world? The other world's a different story. Hashem doesn't, nothing is held back. Everything is rewarded. But in this world, it's not going to be good. Yeah. I know people, as you know people, come more observant, come closer to Hashem, and things got worse for them. What's going on over here? Well, if things are getting worse for me, and I keep Shabbos and now I lose my money, you know what, God? You know what? I'm not interested in doing this anymore. Is that the attitude? Or proper attitude is, I came to Shabbos because I love Hashem. That's why I came to Shabbos. I'm leaving, keeping Shabbos. I want to do the right thing. Things go worse. What should I do? If that's what the Eibishter wants, I can't stop it. First of all, it could be if you wouldn't keep Shabbos, it would be even worse. But who knows that? Nobody really knows that. That's not the point. We don't do mitzvahs because of payback in this world. The Mishnah says very clear, Schar mitzvah b'hai alma leka. Reward for mitzvahs. In this world, it does not exist. It doesn't exist. And the Gemara tells us stories that mamash challenge your faith. That the Gemara says there's a story that the man was sent by his mother, and it says you honor your parents, that you have a long life. And it says if you keep the mitzvah of shiluach hakein, sending away the mother bird, you have a long life. And he sent by his mother to go get some eggs, and he sent away the bird, and he fell off a ladder, and he broke his neck and died. He did two mitzvahs that you promised long life for, and he died doing those mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, L'man yarichen yomecha. Gemara says, it doesn't mean yomecha in this world. It means in the other world. In other words, it's even that which does say in the Torah is not necessarily going to be fulfilled literally. Sometimes it may be. Sometimes it may not be. So Rus says, I know that. I know that coming to Israel and joining the Jewish people is not my ticket to heaven. My ticket to success. It is a ticket to heaven. It's not my ticket to success. In fact, she says, ever since I've joined the Jewish people, I've known nothing but misfortune. Did I run away from it? You're trying to push me away. She says, "Koyasa Hashem li v'chayesef." If that's what Hashem does to me, if that's what He continues to do, so be it. I'm sticking with you. Ki amoves yafrid beinio beinoyich. It's only going to be death that will separate us. Only death will part us. In other words, as long as I'm able, I'm clinging to you. I'm sticking with you. That's it. Nothing is going to part us. Things will get really bad for you, Rus. I'm sticking with you anyway. The Amleis brings a very interesting interpretation of this. He says that when a person, say a woman's going to get married, so she's gonna get buried then later with her husband's family. Used to have family graves. That was common. Today you have like community cemeteries, family cemeteries. So she said that even if chayesef Hashem v'chayitin, even if some terrible things happen to me, and it doesn't it, whether it's good, whether it's bad, he says at the end of the day, I'll die kasher b'asher tomusi amos, where you will die, I will die. V'shama kaver, I'm getting buried there. In other words, I'm not going to Israel to get a husband to get away from you. You're not my excuse. I'm not using you to get to some kind of dreamland, to get to some kind of aspiration or some kind of fulfillment. My relationship with you is sincere, so sincere that only hamavas yafred bini b'nech, only death will part us. So this is some very, very strong and profound words. And that's what the Teres Chesed says. Don't think that I'm going with you so that I can get a husband, and that's the only reason I'm going. No. I'm going to be I have a relationship with you regardless. And I'm not, you're not my a temporary crutch. You're not my somebody who simply advances me, but in fact, my commitment to you and my love for you, my relationship is absolutely sincere. Now, we see a very interesting thing here. And the interesting thing we see is that Naomi told Rus two separate things. The Geras Shmuel says, if you look at the words carefully, of what Naomi told Rus, and how Rus responded to Naomi. Rus was told by Naomi, first of all, so go back to your family. In other words, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? I'm not your family anyway. Go to your real mother. And secondly, she says, how are you going to be Jewish? How are you going to become a Jew? So it's two separate things. First of all, this relationship's not going to work. What's going to bind us together? And secondly, this being Jewish is not going to work. So the Geras Shmuel says, Rus responded on both counts. She said, first of all, I want you to know I'm sticking with you. My relationship with you is profound. It is meaningful. And wherever you'll go, I'm going to go. And where you're going to stay, I'm going to stay. And as far as being Jewish is concerned, it's not even a question for me. He answered her on both counts. Number one, I want to stay with you. Number two, I want to remain Jewish. As the Medrash says, "Mutav al yodcha v'lo yayidei acheres." We mentioned this before. Yaakov Shemedi says, "I'd rather join the Jewish people through you than join somebody else. So let me come with you. And anyway, I'm going to join the Jewish people. Nothing is really going to stop me." So this is the tempo of Rus's words, and this is the kind of very, very forceful response that she gives to her mother, to her mother-in-law, to Naomi. A final interesting understanding of the words, where I will go, you will go, the Medrash says, Im li yamin, im li smoil, you turn right, I'll go right, you go left, I'll go left with you. She says, Ka yosef ki hamavis yafrid. This is actually, according to one interpretation in the Mamluyas, she said, this is like a prayer. The prayer is that however things go with you, they should go with me. What do you mean the prayer? It's not a prayer. If you want to go with her, go with her. You don't want to go with her, don't go with her. She says, no. If Hashem decides you should die, I want to die together with you. In other words, this is only actual death should part us. And even that, but for Shama cover, they all be buried. So even if death isn't a part of us, but at least we'll be buried together. So Rus has this exceptional relationship with Naomi that she desperately wants to hold on to, but that is not, does not invalidate in any way her desire to come and join Am Yisrael. Both of these feelings are very, very sincere and very powerful. And that's how Rus responds to Naomi. So how does Naomi respond? So, Megillus Rus continues, Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18, Vateide ki misametzes. She saw that she's tenacious, that she clings, that she's not backing down. Misametzes, the word of oimetz or imutz, means also the idea that she's determined. It indicates an extraordinary effort being expended. So she saw how much effort she's putting in, how determined she is. And therefore, batechdal ledabre leh. She stopped speaking to her. Another very funny verse. She's determined to stay with her? I'll give her silent treatment. Hello? She just said, don't pierce my heart. And don't push me away. And don't... So you see how determined the girl is. You see how sincere she is. She wants to be with you. Well, I won't talk to her now. What's going on over here? Okay, it's not unkind. It has to be understood. I'm just trying to show you how you read the psukim literally. They don't make sense. You have to study the psukim. Okay, so what is first of all the meaning of Atedah ki misametzes? She saw that she's so tenacious, that she's clinging, that there's such a... She's not backing down. What does this mean? So when Naomi saw the way she's speaking, that her reaction to her was almost like unnatural. Tedeki misametzes. Misametzes means she's getting stronger, not weaker. What does this mean? Okay, let's say you have something, you have a bee in your bonnet. Very strong idea. They really feel very strongly about this. And you come and, you know, you speak to the powers to be. And they say, oi, please, was masach naris? Maybe it's just not going to work. And they give you all these reasons why it's not a good idea. It's not good. It's not going to work. It's not good. So what happens invariably? If you get pressure from all sides, your resolve starts to weaken a little. The more you get pummeling, you back down a little. In fact, usually what happens is people make a big demand. And they come back to such as the demand diminishes immediately. So I'm not asking for so much. The nature of things is when a person is not being treated kindly and not being accepted, is you don't want me, you don't want my favors, you don't want my love. Okay, fine. But Naomi sees that as the more she tries to push Ruth away, the harsher she deals with her, not only she still continues, she's getting even stronger. She said, this is not normal. Vateda kimisametzes. She said, this is not a whim. This is the real deal. Only if it will be the real deal could you become stronger, not weaker. When a mother is trying to help a child and the person says, I can't help your child, the mother doesn't say, in that case, fine, then don't help my child. The mother gets even more demanding. She gets even, why? Because that's she really cares. When you really care about something, nobody's going to talk to you, you don't really care about that. Oh, yes, I do. You're going to tell me what I care about? When she sees Kim Sametsis, she says, wow, she's really sincere. That's the word, that's the meaning, says the Be'er Maim, Meshav Nefesh. That's the meaning of Atayda ki Misametzes. What did she see? Misametzes, she saw her determination, but she saw her sincerity. That's the proof. Because really, how do you know if somebody's sincere? You know, the Gemara says, Elikim Yireh LeLevav. God sees in the heart. Do you know what's in the heart? You know what somebody's thinking? How could any of us know? But when you see somebody so determined, when you see that they're not being dissuaded, it's like, wow, this is the real deal. So when she sees that, so it says, Vatechta ladabre leho. See, this doesn't mean he gave her silent treatment. She stopped speaking about this to her. In other words, she stopped her words, she stopped her dissuasion. Because at this point, she realized that if she's going to keep pummeling her, who knows, maybe she'll get weakened. Maybe because she's hungry, She's tired. She's pressured. You know, the pressure was unbelievable. So because of all these things, now at this point, Naomi starts to realize, Ruth is right. Al tifku bi. Remember how the Medrash interpreted it? Al techti li. Don't do a sin because of me. Naomi says, if I'm going to come and continue, you know, play this game anymore, I'm going to become the guilty one. What if I do actually succeed in dissuading her? Then I'm going to be doing the wrong thing. And indeed, the Gemara says, and Rashi, this is the Gemara Rashi quoted before, that the Gemara in Yevamos tells us, Ein medaktikin the Ein marbin. You don't see. You sure you want to do this? Yes. But you sure? It's three times you talked about. Remember last class? Three times. But after three times, you're not supposed to say, okay, you really don't want to do this. That's not appropriate. Once a person demonstrates sincerity, then the Bezdin has to accept it. And where do we learn that from? From the story of Ruth and Naomi. Naomi saw sincerity. How did she see sincerity? Vatereke misametzes. Once she saw misametzes, immediately she stopped this talk. That's it. In that case, she basically accepted her. Now, she also doesn't want to all of a sudden start encouraging her, because then, if she starts encouraging her, this is so smart what you're doing, this is so good what you're doing, maybe then she's just going to do it in the end because of the encouragement. So therefore, Naomi doesn't want to speak either way. She doesn't want to convince her. She doesn't want to dissuade her. Persuasion and dissuasion are both now going, are both C's. She says, if she's sincere, she'll make the rest of the journey with me. As they say, the facts will speak for themselves. We'll see what happens now. Naomi says, I've done my duty. I did all I had to do. I made my dissuasion. We'll see. We'll see if she continues to follow. And once Naomi saw that she wants so desperately to convert, to join the Jewish people, as the Igeres Shmuel says, she saw it was a davar mukhlat etzla. It was like resolved. This is about Ruth's resolve. She saw her resolve. She remains resolute. Then in that case, she says, so that, what was her only request? She says, the request from Naomi was just Naomi should take her along. She didn't say, I'm not going to convert if you don't take me along. Her resoluteness was in her willingness to join the Jewish people. Not her willingness. She was absolutely resolute in her conviction. She was going to join the Jewish people. She just didn't want Naomi to push her away. That was the only request she made. When she saw it like that, she said, then I have no right anymore. She's ready. In her mind, she's already joined the Jewish people. And since she's joined the Jewish people in her mind, therefore there's nothing more to talk about over here. The Simchas HaRegel says a phenomenal thing here. Phenomenal thing. And it answers the questions that people ask. Because the next Pasuk, which we're going to learn about next class, Meretz Hashem. But the next Pasuk, I'll just sneak preview the Pasuk Yotes. Vatelachta shtehem. They went together. You know what Rashi says of those words? First of all, I should tell you, Rashi, I'm Pasuk Yotches. Rashi says, as I spoke this out already, Mikan, Vatechta Ladaber, stop speaking. Doesn't mean she didn't talk to her anymore. They talked about whatever. They made conversation. Mikan, Omer, Eim, Marvin, Olav. Eim, Adaktikin. Don't put the pressure too much. You did the litmus test. Said it three times. That's it. Vatelach Neshtem, Omer, Rabbi Avos, says Rashi, Bo, Yurei, Kama, Chaviv, and Agedon, Vnakodesh, Baruch Hu. Come and see how much Hashem loves converts. Kivan Shanitna Daitelis Gair. She decided she was going to convert. She didn't convert yet. She decided she's going to convert. Hishvaisa Kasav Naomi. The Torah makes her equal to Naomi. Naomi is this illustrious Jewish woman who comes from the Shevet Yehuda and all this unbelievable lineage from which eventually the Mashiach has to come. David HaMelech has to come. The moment Ruth decided to convert, I see people ask the question, they say, well, how could this be? This Rashi, we see only later she converted. I don't understand what the question is. Rashi says clearly, he says, once she resolved, resolution is enough, that changed everything. What do you mean that changed? It doesn't change anything. It's just a decision somebody makes doesn't change. So the Simchas HaRegel says, you want to understand this pasuk, he says? Take a look, there's a Gemara about a man whose name was Reish Lakish. You know what Reish Lakish means in Aramaic? It's robber chief. We had a great sage named Robber Chief. Robber, thief. It sounds more like a name for a rapper. No. Not a rabbi. What kind of name is that? Well, there's a story. The story was that this man was a powerful individual. He was a mugger, part of a gang. And he came upon a group of sages, and they robbed them. And one of those sages was the man who eventually became the senior sage of Eretz Yisrael. His name was Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan was an exceedingly handsome man. The Gemara goes on to talk about the exceptional appearance of Rabbi Yochanan. The Shlokesh is a bum, you know. He was into carnal pleasure. And he takes a look at Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, "Tell me, you got any sisters?" So Rabbi Yochanan says, "Funny you should ask. I do. But she's not going to marry a bum like you. If you committed to learning Torah, maybe I can introduce you to my sister." We will never know if Rabbi Yochanan actually thought something was going to happen. The Shlokesh said, "Really?" And from, you know, you're talking about mitoich shalei lishma. From the biggest shalei lishma possible. From the biggest, not for the sake of God, for the sake of meeting what he thought, perceived to be, was probably a fantastically beautiful woman. He said, "Okay. Okay." I mean, clearly this is an extraordinary neshama. He said, "I'm committed. I'm leaving this life behind. I am going to become a student of yours. You teach me Torah." This was a Jewish bum, okay? He's a Yiddish boy. "I'm going to leave my life of thievery, of robbery, of muggery, if that's a word, and I'm going to join the Jewish people." So the Gemara says, Reish Lakish was so physically fit that he was able to jump from this river, from one side in a single jump, like an Olympian jumper, from one side to the other. And he couldn't do it anymore. So he says to Rabbi Yochanan, "What are you, like some kind of sorcerer, a magician? What'd you do to me? How'd you sap my strength?" Rabbi Yochanan said, "Once you committed your strength to Torah, it's physiologically it changed. It's like once you committed to use your energy for intellectual pursuit, for spiritual pursuit, you drained it from the other parts of your existence. And therefore, Rabbi Yiddish Lakish became physically weakened because he had committed his strength elsewhere." That's the story in the Gemara. So the Simchas HaRegel says, how did Rus know? Naomi know Rus was sincere. She saw all of a sudden, Rus is having a hard time keeping up with her. Rus is like struggling to keep up with her. So the Simchas HaRegel says, because she committed her strength to becoming a member of Am Yisrael, it physically sapped her. This little speech she made physically sapped her. Now, a faker can say whatever they want. It doesn't change them. This physiologically impacted Rus. Naomi saw suddenly she can't even walk. She's like drained of strength. So he said, "Wow. Wow. Mishadah says Naomi. Naomi saw that? That she has to tzichel hisamet? She has to try to keep up with her? Naomi's much older than her. She's an older woman. This is a younger woman. She sees, saw that. She says, I'm not gonna bug her anymore. This girl's really serious. She committed herself 100%. To the point that it had a physical effect. It physically drained her of her strength." It's a beautiful interpretation. Beautiful explanation. What does it mean that she saw that she was trying to keep up? The Yayin HaRekech adds a very interesting thing. He says, and whoever really tries, you really expend every ounce of strength, you're misametz, Meisif LeKoyach. Hashem adds a whole new strength. And we see actually, says the Yayin HaRekech, that there's only one place in the entire Tanakh, only one place where this word mitametzet shows up. It's only here. This is the only word. It's extremely rare to have a word, a descriptive word, which is only found, a verb which is only found once in Tanakh. It's extremely rare. And he says this is to tell you that there was never, from the time of Rus, there was never a woman who desired to become part of the Jewish people so ardently. There was never a person before or since who was so much misamet, who overcame so many inner demons and struggles, who marshaled every ounce of koyach just to be able to join the Jewish people. And that's why, as I said last week, Rus is the paradigm. She is the archetypal convert. There's Yisrael and there's Rus. And Rus is greater than Yisrael. She is the greatest convert of all time. She's the example for every convert to follow. The Malei Omer says something interesting. He says, Naomi was already used to deprivation. She had lost her wealth previously. She was used to deprivation already. So you know what happens? You get used to things. When people are used to living a life of luxury, they get Charlie horse from the organ on a block. You know, you only could drive there. So Naomi was, but Rus is a princess. And the princess is not used to working barefoot in hot sand. And she saw that she's having a really hard time, but she's still doing it. In other words, she saw that she was Beteva la Hoysri Yechol Lachasim Naomi, even though Naomi's older, she couldn't keep up. Ela his Amtsa Leilach, she was forcing herself. And once again, that became the most stunning proof that Ruth was absolutely sincere. So at this point, Naomi stops the dissuasion, and at this point, together, as we learned, we'll see going into Pasuk Yotes, that they lachno shtehem, they continue to go, ad boyena beis lochem, until they come to the city of Beit Lechem. And what happens there, you'll find out next week.